Good afternoon, Selectress Dyer, and good afternoon once again to all Kandaki Queen Size listeners. I'm very pleased to be able to speak to you briefly again about punk and reggae music in London in my own experience as a young man in Notting Hill and other areas of London. Now, in July 1977, Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols appeared on a radio show on Capital Radio in London called The Punk and His Music. Now, myself and various other people expected him to mainly be playing raucous or kind of experimental kind of music. He did play a lot of experimental music. He played Captain Beefheart and he played Can, who, as you know, I'm sure are from Germany. But he also played a lot of reggae. I can't remember the songs, but I know there was one by Ken Booth and another one by Dr. Alimentado. I do have a recording of this somewhere, and I must fish it out. Anyway, further from that, John Rotten was going out at the time. His girlfriend was a lady called Nora Forster. Now, Nora Forster is a German lady living in London, and she got a daughter called Ariana, obviously Ariana Forster. And her daughter, an extremely outrageous and wild person, but very funny, she was in a punk band called The Slits, and they are extremely raw at first, but as with all punk bands, when they get better at playing their instruments, that they get bored with what they're doing and they want to be a little bit more experimental. Anyway, Ariana called herself Ari Up, and a couple of the other members of the band, those Tessa Pollitt, Paloma. Paloma was actually a Spanish woman who was Joe Strummer's girlfriend for quite a considerable period of time. And he indeed wrote the 101ers' first single, Keys to Your Heart. He wrote that about her. Anyway, so there's a lot of reggae interest there as well. And the Slits went on to, as I say, get much better at their instruments. They are incredibly raw. The drumming was almost like tribal, I suppose you could say. It's extremely primitive, but extremely effective. So they had record companies pursuing them. A lot of it, I think, was the novelty of them all being girls. And a lot of the record companies at the time, they wanted to jump on the punk bandwagon and they just wanted to sign just about anybody they could. So anyway, Island Records finally managed to get the Slits to sign. They were very discerning about who they would sign to because Island Records, as you know, was originally a reggae label. And they released, I think it must have been about November or December 79. I'm not 100% sure. And I haven't done the research because this is totally unrehearsed, as I'm telling you. A song called Typical Girls, which is very dub influenced, and the B-side was a cover version of Marvin Gaye's Heard It Through the Grapevine. Now, I didn't own that myself, but my friends did, so I got to hear it quite a lot. I also got to hear their first album, which was called Cut. That's very reggae and dub based too. Very, very good album. I say, I've never owned it myself, but my friends do, and it's still very highly rated today. I could recommend it thoroughly. Also, another band at the time, and now they were actually living in Notting Hill, and I could see their graffiti everywhere, was Killing Joke. Now, their bass player, a fella called Martin Glover, his nickname was Pig Youth, after Big Youth, a reggae artist, because not only was he crazy about dub, he was also extremely filthy, dirty, and didn't wash, so that's why they called him Pig Youth. Anyway, Martin Glover later became an extremely well-respected and still is today and highly rated producer. He's produced so many records for so many incredibly famous things. And of course, as is usually the case right now, I can't think of anybody. But they released their first EP, Turn to Red. That was also on originally on their own Malicious Damage label. and later releases were on Ireland, and the 12-inch Turn to Red is extremely dub orientated, and another fine record. Now, a little while ago, I was talking about Johnny Rotten. Now, when the Sex Pistols split up, not only was I extremely heartbroken, but obviously John Rotten had some other ideas in mind, which is probably some of the reason why the Sex Pistols split up in the first place. They were not very amenable to the material and the writing he was doing at that time later on. And also, of course, Sid's dreadful behaviour and an awful drug addiction. So John got together with a fella called Keith Levine, who is the guitarist. He'd been in an earlier version of The Clash. A Canadian drummer by the name of Jim Walker, who I think just happened to be in London at the time. A fella called Jar Wobble, whose real name is John Wardle. He was one of Rotten's friends from college, Kingsway College in Holborn in London. And he was not a musician, but he learned to play the bass. I think he was probably taught a little bit by Keith Levine. And of course, Rotten did most of the songwriting, etc. Now, their first album, imaginatively titled Public Image Limited, was quite experimental. When I first heard it, I wasn't really sure whether I liked it or not, but I did notice that the bass was incredibly heavy, particularly on the intro of their first single called Public Image. Anyway, their second album, which came out in 1979, late 1979, not only was it packaged in a unique way, it was three 12-inch singles cut as loud as possible, because Rotten wanted them to look and sound like dub plates, and they were encased in a metal film canister. Made them extremely hard to get out, and it was a bit of a nuisance. Copies that are in really good condition now are not only hard to find, but they're, you know, quite collectible and quite valuable. Anyway, that's a very dub-based album. I can recommend that too. One track that really springs to mind that's unquestionably, in my opinion, the most dub-sounding is Careering. It's got really heavy bass on it, quite a bit of synthesizer. The lyrics are quite tortured, and of course, even though it's dub-influenced, John Rotten is using his own voice. Now, this is something that I wanted to touch on briefly, and this is just my own opinion. Now, the other punk bands that did reggae-influenced music, now, some of them, they did not use their own voice. They affected a West Indian accent. Now, I personally think they should have used their own voices, because the music and the rhythm was fine. It spoke for itself. One particular example I can think of is a band that had chart success with a great song. They were called The Members, and they had a hit record in early 1979. It's an offshore banking business. Superb lyrics, very good performance with the music, but I think Nicky Tesco could have just sung in his own voice instead of trying to sound like a West Indian. But as I say, that's just my opinion. Another highly reggae-influenced band was The Ruts. They were a super band, made a great album called The Crack, and Malcolm Owen sadly died early in 1980 of a heroin overdose. But some of their B-sides, one in particular on the B-side of Something That I Said, Give Youth a Chance. Another great piece of music, but again, he's not using his own voice anyway. But also, reggae was still moving into a more lovers rock kind of direction. At the time I left school when I was 16, Silly Games by Janet Kay was at number one. It was at number one for quite a few weeks. And another record that I remember a lot was Living on the Front Line by Eddie Grant. Now, Eddie Grant is an extremely talented person. He was in a successful band in the 60s called The Equals. He also had his own reggae record label called Torpedo Records, which released a few notable sides. A lot of them were skinhead orientated. I had one called Aggro by the Bother Boys. I don't have it any longer. It's just Eddie Grant under another name and some session musicians, but aggro being the term used for violence at the time in England. And regarding living on the front line, I don't know where the front line was in Brixton, but the front line in Notting Hill was known as All Saints Road. And that was not a road that I would walk down, as brave as I am or was, because there was so much police presence. And I think the West Indian community, see any white person walking down that road at that time, would probably think they're an undercover policeman and you would not be very safe. Anyway, that's it for now. I hope you enjoy this snippet of information. And if I'm invited back to do some more, I will do so. Peace.